And good morning. Thank you very much, and welcome to the program today. I remember there was a wall along the back of the driveway, older home, and it was just covered with this vine, but it produced the most beautiful, vibrant purple flowers. That's called passion flower. Now, you have probably been around a person before that outright had a panic attack. And you thought to yourself, I don't ever want to experience what that person's experiencing. I feel bad for them. I wish they did not have panic attacks. But if I say the word calm, relaxed, joyous, happy, energetic, feeling good on the inside, everybody knows what that means. They would say, yes, I would choose that. But there's going to be some people, they really deal horribly with anxiety. And the anxiety can rule the better part of their lives. Well, I came across, all I'm saying this is for is because I came across this one study. And what they do is they're looking at passion flower versus taking a drug called a benzodiazepine, which is an extremely common drug. Anyway, in the abstract, it says if patients suffer from serious but not extreme anxiety, they respond equally well to supplementation with passion flower just as well as they do if they took a pharmaceutical drug. This was a small clinical trial that was published in the year 2001, so I thought to myself, well, I haven't seen this one before, 2001. By the way, this program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Roy Morgan. Okay, here's the title of the article. Passion flower in the treatment of generalized anxiety. When they say it's not severe anxiety, I think they're probably referring to people that they feel so bad that they just can't take it anymore. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard of somebody taking their life through suicide, but it's just never good. I just hate it. But anyway, what they're doing in this study is they're comparing a very small extract of passion flower with a benzo drug. Okay. Here's a study right here. Psychiatrists at Tehran University of Medical Sciences in Iran, they divided 36 patients with anxiety complaints into two groups. One group took a tablet with 30 milligrams of oxazepam, which is a benzodiazepine, plus 45 drops without an active substance. That's kind of, they just put that in there. Anyway, for 4 weeks, they go on to say that oxazepam is a benzodiazepine with a sedative and an anti-anxiety effect. Okay. Do you know what a benzo drug is? It's something that sedates you. It can actually kind of put you in a hypnotic state. It's used to relieve anxiety. A lot of times it's prescribed for people that have muscle spasms or they're prone to seizures or they really suffer horribly from insomnia. I think I've heard this phrase, if I can't fall asleep, I'll take a Xanax. Okay? So one of the drugs would be called Xanax. That's one version of it. Another one's Valium. Then you got Ativan. Then there's Halcyon, which a lot of these drugs are given to Klonopin. You've probably heard of those before. It's always interesting. Sometimes a person's blood pressure will be so high, and they'll get so wound up, and their systolic is 195 over a diastolic of 110, and they'll give them a Klonopin, and it'll just go right back down to like 135 over 80. But those drugs, they have very significant side effects. One of them is you're drowsy all the time. How would you like to walk around through life feeling like you got a hangover and you can't really function? Especially if you have a job that requires mental processing and functioning. The use of your mind, your memory, your recall. Another side effect is confusion. Another one is just being lightheaded or even being dizzy. That would not be fun. That is one condition that I'm always very sympathetic to because I have been dizzy before from a head injury, and it is no fun. It is a different form of misery. I'm not trying to complain and get sympathy. It's just the way it is. You don't want an individual to constantly feel like they're fixing to fall over. That's horrible. Well, the other one that causes, it causes memory problems. How would you like it if somebody said, what's your name? And you think, I don't even know. You know what the real problem is, though? They're addictive. These benzodiazepine drugs, or the benzos drugs, they're all addictive. That means it's very easy for a prescription to be written and for you to get it and take it. It's not hard at all. All you got to do is just ask for it. You'll get it. But it's very addictive, which means the moment you start taking it, you get hooked on it pretty doggone quick. Okay. So they had one group take these anti-anxiety medications, prescription drug. The other group, guess what they took? They took passion flower. Let me see. Where am I in this study right here? Oh, that's right. They didn't. The other thing that caught my attention, they did not have a placebo group, meaning there was not group number three that had nothing to deal with severe anxiety. Anyway, or moderate to severe anxiety, I should say. So there's no placebo group. I know. There's so much of this. There's a lot of physicians that when they read studies like that and they say, well, unless there's a placebo group, I'm not buying into anything. All they're really doing is they're testing people. It's called the Hamilton Anxiety Score. And so, by very definition, moderate anxiety is when you have score between 15 and 23. I think when you start getting above the number 30, that's where people start thinking that maybe suicide is a good idea or a good plan. It is not. I'm so sorry. And so, that's what they're doing. And so, all they're doing is they're comparing what happens to individuals when we give them a specific benzodiazepine drug called oxazepam. I don't know what the street name is. Maybe it's Xanax for all I know. But we could look that up. I just didn't do that. But what they do is they tend to activate the gamma-aminobutyric acid receptor sites. They either gave them the drug or they gave them passion flower. And as you remember, passion flower grows from a vine. It's actually a pretty little flower. So every 5 days, the researchers had the subjects complete a questionnaire which they could rate their anxiety. Okay? It's called the Hamilton Anxiety Score. It's very easy to look up. You could take the test yourself, and you could determine from the score of zero, which means you got actually anything seven or less means you really don't suffer from anxiety. Mild anxiety would be a score of 7 to 15, but moderate anxiety, which is what they were looking at, was between 15 and 23. If I said severe earlier, that's just me misspeaking. Sorry about that. Sometimes I think in different terms, but that's my fault. And so, based on this, the researchers from both groups, they calculated the Hamilton Anxiety Score. I can tell you where the average starting point was for these patients. It was right at around a 20. That means they had moderate anxiety. That means on some level they are disturbed pretty much all day long. So the researchers kept track of which side effects occurred, and in the table below, I'm skipping that one right there. Can I just say that, you know, I've already covered the side effects of the drugs. But they're looking at what happens when you take a pharmaceutical drug versus taking passion flower. And I'm telling you, it's night and day. One has a whole bunch of side effects and one does not. Anyway, this is just a trial that lasted for 30 days. I wish you could see the graph that I'm looking at. But they started out with a Hamilton anxiety score of at 20. And on day number 30, and what it does is it just keeps going down and down and down from day one all the way down to all the way for 30 days. If you want to say that's 4 weeks, that's close enough for me. But it continues to go down, which makes me wonder, what would have happened if they had done this test with passion flower for, say, 2 months or 3 months? I'm just curious. Because it doesn't show any sign of plateauing or leveling out, which means the longer they took the passion flower, the better their anxiety got. And, of course, what I'm getting at is the passion flower, it did just, it's a significant improvement over the benzodiazepine, and I'm just reading what the researchers say. We conclude that passion flower extract is potentially a significant improvement over the benzodiazepine drugs in the management of generalized anxiety, particularly when drug-induced impairment of job performance is to be avoided, write the researchers. They go on to write that a large-scale trial is justified. As far as we know, I have never read about a large-scale trial follow-up study, which is pretty common. Anytime they find something natural that works that well, quite often you kind of see it put on the shelf where they don't really, you know, we can't really have anything that's safe to take, can we? I'm just joking. All right, but the other reason is, I bet you anything, you know somebody, they really struggle with anxiety. They know what it's like to be uncomfortable living in their skin all day long. Well, how would you like it if when you lay down to go to sleep at night, your mind just races? You cannot stop processing. Of course, you know, that's not ideal. That's not what you want. A lady told me recently she only sleeps 2 hours a night. I mean, what she said was that her very best sleep was between 4 and 6 a.m. Well, anyway, that's just an idea. And the other thing that makes me kind of excited about this, or pro-passion flower, this is just a substance that's been found in nature. If I picked up an herbal textbook and I started reading the history of its use, and let's just say I went back 400 or 500 years where herbalists or midwives or physicians, folk doctors, however you want to say it, the more they write about this, it makes it seem like it's very, very safe. What do you do when you have a natural herbal substance, a plant that God has designed and made that grows from the soil, and it doesn't have any toxicity, no one complains of horrible side effects, and it's very effective? Well, what do you think about that? Well, you can just walk into just about any health food store and you could say, where's your aisle of herbal remedies? And you could actually go back there and look on the shelf, and there might be 7 different brands, you know, manufacturers, companies with individual names, and you might look at, where's the passion flower? And so you might pick up a bottle and go, wow, this one's pretty expensive. It's $7.68. No, that's actually pretty cheap. You know I'm being sarcastic about that. But then the next thing you think is, or the next question you ask is, okay, I have the hardest time falling asleep. I never feel relaxed. How much should I take? Well, that's the part where a normal human being is going to have to find out what is the Goldilocks just right dose. So let's just use sleep as the example. Let us say that a person has the hardest time falling asleep and maintaining their sleep. You know, they wake up, they got, that means broken sleep. That's not good. And they say, let me just try one capsule, because the manufacturer recommends 2 a day. I'll just try one for starters. Okay, fair enough. Well, what if you don't really get a result from that? You might ask yourself, well, maybe I should try 2 like the manufacturer recommends. Well, what if you still don't get a result with that? I've had people tell me that as they experiment with passion flower, it may take anywhere between 6 to 7 to 8 capsules of just the dried, you know, flower and herb in a capsule. And that's the Goldilocks just right dose. And when they do that, all of a sudden their sleep is much deeper, much better. They have found a winning combination to help assist the nervous system and the musculoskeletal system at being able to relax. I know this is overly simplistic, but you're supposed to restore yourself and renew yourself when you sleep at night. Does that make sense? Of course it does. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. And how many different ways can a person deal with anxiety? Can they do it by eating nacho cheese Doritos or hot flaming Cheetos and Takis? Of course they can. Does that do anything to improve the health of their body? No. If you want to develop diabetes, that would be a good way to do that, which is not really, I'm just saying that flippantly. I don't want you to do that. What if a person says, the only way I can keep myself calm is by drinking 10 Cokes a day? Well, again, that's going to have side effects. It's going to ultimately destroy and wreck your health. That's not what you call a good trade-off. Well, what if a person says, well, the way that I can control my anxiety is I dip a can of Skoal every day? Well, again, I don't want anybody that I know developing oral cancer. I've seen that several times. It is not pretty, and I feel so bad for the person. But you can cause a really bad cancer from that tobacco in your mouth. Okay. What if a person says, as a boy, I think all my friends, their parents smoke cigarettes. Not always both parents, but usually the father. Sometimes the mother. But my dad smoked cigarettes. I remember watching him before, desperate for a cigarette, picking up a cigarette that maybe had two puffs left in it at the most, and lighting it up, nearly burning his lip, maybe to try to get the last bit out of it. But yeah, you could say that's one way to calm your nerves, by flooding your body with nicotine. I mean, I kind of see the other all day long. If it's not cigarettes, what if you're vaping? Do you know that what do they say? That vaping contains 3 times the amount of nicotine. Now, if you ask me a question, do you mean per puff? Well, I don't know the answer to that. And so I can't really answer that question. That's just what I've heard passing in the news or in some studies. I don't have any way to actually measure or verify it, but that's what I've heard. So if that doesn't sound precise, well, then I'm probably not precise. But from what I've heard and what I've read, that when you vape, that's 3 times the amount of nicotine. Now, you tell me, do they put nicotine in there to improve your health? Probably not. Do they do it because it's highly addictive? Of course. What do you think they do to all junk food? They load it up with chemicals, and they load it up with sugar because they know it's highly addictive. Sugar's kind of like crack cocaine. You get a little taste of it, and all you do is you want more and more. But consuming cigarettes, or using cigarettes, or vaping, is that really an effective way to deal with anxiety? Have you ever just stood in front of a store that sells alcohol, and I'm just saying beer and wine, that's what we have here in Jacksonville, and it could be 7:30 in the morning, and you see people pushing buggies with 3 cases of beer in there? And yes, maybe it's for a good reason, but I'm guessing whoever's consuming all that, it's not going to be in their best interest. But that would be another way of dealing with anxiety, right? Or what about people that turn to marijuana? Anyway, all I was bringing up is the research that I uncovered from the year 2001 about passion flower being very effective. As a matter of fact, it actually seemed to be more effective than the benzodiazepine like Ativan or Valium, Klonopin, what's the other one? Xanax. Yeah, that's a pretty common one. Yeah, so if it's more effective and it doesn't have all the horrific side effects, couldn't that be something that you might prayerfully consider? And I always remember my pharmacy professor in school, he would tell us, what is the minimum effective dose? And you know what that concept means. I know you probably have never heard of that before. But what that means is we want to give the patient the very least amount of a pharmaceutical drug with the idea that we're going to work with them and for them to help them figure out how do they improve their health. So if a doctor prescribes you a drug, you always ask the follow-up question, so what is your plan? Tell me your strategy to help me get well, besides just this drug, so I can get off of it. And let them explain it to you. Let them tell you, this is what we want to do. This drug is just for a very, very short season. That's what all my pharmacy professors were saying. Drugs are only meant to be used for a very, very short season until you can get the patient back to good. Now, does that sound foreign to you? Does that even sound like it's being unreasonable? I don't think it is. I was visiting with a lady, and she was telling me she had horrible, horrible vertigo. She had blacked out. She'd lost her balance. She'd fallen. It's terrifying, pretty scary, dizzy, lightheaded. And as I was looking through the medications, I think the very first 12 drugs on her list, when I looked them up on the computer, drugs.com, do you know what the number one side effect was for each one of those first 12 drugs? It was all dizziness, lightheadedness, or vertigo. You might say, is that the same as being swimmy-headed? Yes. How about everything spinning and you can't keep standing upright? That would be another way of saying it. I don't know really what happened or how it happened. Of course, I don't recommend a person stop taking drugs ever. But she stopped taking those. I don't know how that happened. And guess what happened? All of a sudden, all the horrible blacking out and the vertigo just magically disappeared into thin air. So you know going into this, every drug that you take has a side effect. Sometimes they are very unpleasant. But rarely, as in rarely, does a drug ever produce a direct effect on fixing something. And almost all of them have horrible side effects. You know, this older generation, maybe I could call them the baby boomers back from, I don't know what year, let's say 1949. They definitely have such a level of reverence and respect for the pharmaceutical industry, they'll do anything and everything that their physician asks them. And if that's their choice, though. Every human being on the earth has a free will. You get to decide what you're going to do to improve your health. But I don't know. Do you question those sort of things? Okay. All right. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. It's so much funner to think of ways to improve your health. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm getting out of here so I can talk to you without the radio.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to ask you a question regarding a drug that I'm taking. And number one, I had AFib, and they put me on Xarelto, and I kept walking and exercising, and back in this past March, I got off of Xarelto, and they put me on baby aspirin. And I don't want to take that baby aspirin. Baby aspirin is, I guess, okay, but I just don't feel that I want to take it. I'd rather take a drink tea. And that's what I wanted to ask you, your opinion on that.
The one thing that I wish that I could do here at the radio station is bring my laptop computer, because it would be so easy to type in all this information in the computer, and you can get endless amounts of articles that actually give you scientific references for this and that and the other thing. Everything from Xarelto to AFib. But can I go back toward the AFib just for a second? Because I think if we do that, we're probably getting like a little bit closer to helping address the root of your question. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm purposely going to refer to is there's three minerals. Well, actually, one of them might be an element. Have you ever heard of iodine before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That one's kind of tricky because iodine doesn't really take a metallic form like, say, zinc does, or magnesium or calcium. So the Greek goddess Iodes, she was known to be covered in purple. I'm just talking about Greek mythology. I really don't know any more than what I'm telling you. But what they would do is, the reason they gave iodine its name, it's named after the Greek goddess Iodes, because when they burn it in a flame, it burns a purple smoke. I wonder if that's what they do with those smoking bombs that you buy at the fireworks place at 4th of July, where you light them and they smoke a color.
Right.
But anyway, if we were to look up research right now on how do we help respond to AFib, there's an element that's called iodine. I really believe there is a Goldilocks just right dose that if you take just the right amount of it, that can be a very great factor in helping to reverse the AFib. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think if I made it sound simpler, I'd say AFib is an iodine deficiency. That might have been a little bit easier to say. The other one, there are studies that demonstrate that a zinc deficiency can greatly contribute to the development of AFib.
Oh, it can develop?
Yeah, when you're low in zinc, you betcha. Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you're low in zinc.
Yeah, so what I would say is, in a nutshell, when they've taken people that have been horribly affected by AFib, they've tried to give them zinc to see what would happen, and usually there's a very positive result, which a person walks away and say, you know what, evidently I needed some zinc and some iodine because my AFib's gone now.
Well, you know what? Maybe you are the one that cured my AFib.
Well, and that's the whole reason.
I've listened to your show a number of years. And I do take zinc. And I'm looking at the doctrine of the pill box.
Now, you do know that you get iodine when you eat deep, cold water ocean fish like halibut and flounder and salmon, right?
I don't eat halibut or anything like that, but I do go to one of the big stores you always talk about and get cans of salmon.
You know what? Would you be interested, just you and I, going into the Arctic Ocean this afternoon and doing some fishing for some halibut? I think we could probably score big. You want to go?
Well, you know, that would be fine. If you've got, you know, if you can fly a plane, we'll hop on it.
Oh, I never thought that through. You mean, okay. And then you're going to need a seal-lined coat and pants and gloves.
And I think it's cold here.
Could you imagine how those men that are Eskimos go out and do all that stuff in the cold, freezing ocean in a seal-lined kayak? It sounds like impossible. Well, you talk about some brave men. They are so brave. The other thing that I want you to prayerfully consider, and maybe I'm going to switch gears, and I'm thinking in terms of what do we do when we want the blood to flow well. We don't want it to be thick or sticky or gunky. We don't want it to form clots. And so one of the things that you're doing that I really approve of is you're walking every day. Because walking is one of the simplest ways that you can radically improve the blood flow throughout the body. Mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned this on the radio, but not that terribly long ago, I came across this study. And the study was, can you reverse varicose veins? I know you know what a varicose vein is.
Right, yeah.
Or, you know, during the summertime, you might be out in public driving down the road, and somebody's walking on the sidewalk, and you look at their legs, and you think, wow, those are some pretty big varicose veins there. Well, they show that it takes about almost 2 years to make those go away. But the catch is, you got to walk every day.
Right.
Because under those circumstances, your body's able to correct the circulation and the blood flow. I didn't say 100%, but the study showed it was really beneficial.
Well, that's exactly the reason I said I think you cured me. Because of you, I started walking more. I've always walked, but I would walk about 3 miles in the morning as fast as I could, and then about 2 miles that afternoon or reverse it. I'd get 5 miles in a day walking.
Man, that is spectacular. I'm so proud of you. Way to go.
That's the reason I said that I think you are the one that cured me. And I do take zinc because of your show.
Have you ever heard of magnesium?
Yeah.
And this is one of those things, I don't know that I'm really capable of explaining it in its totality, but there's something about magnesium.
Well,
that when you take it, it holds more oxygen in your arteries and in your heart, and that's a good thing.
Okay. Well, I tell you, in listening to your show, I take magnesium.
Okay.
But I do have a question about that, since you brought it up. I take about two different types of magnesium. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether I'm And one that I'm taking is magnesium, and it's a chelate. I'm probably mispronouncing that.
No, you're doing great.
And I'm not sure if that's...
It sounds feminine, but go ahead.
Well, I'm just not sure.
Were you trying to make a joke by saying she is always late? Is that what you were trying to say?
No. Hey, you're going to get me in trouble.
I know. See, you notice how I always divert the conversation to make you look like you're the one that said it, not me.
That's right.
Yeah, if you want to call it a chelate, that's fine.
I take chelated or chelate, C-H-E, whatever that is.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
And I take magnesium potassium aspirate.
Yeah, good job. Excellent.
I take both of those, and I think on that She magazine. I mean, here I am.
I've already messed you up. I'm so sorry.
You know, hey, I didn't even think about magazine. It sounds like I'm going around buying magazines of women.
No, you're talking about magnesium.
Yeah, I take on that. Chelated or whatever it is.
Yes, sir.
Magnesium 250 milligrams and magnesium potassium aspirate.
Well, do you think you have any horrible side effects from taking that much?
I haven't.
Then that means your body is drinking up every last drop of it and putting it to good use. So that's excellent.
Okay.
Would you believe me if I told you that the latest study that came out about people that consume an optimal amount of fish oil every day, that they live on average 5 years longer? And it's not just 5 years, it's five quality years.
Well, I was taking fish oil too, and I
Good
still
job.
Do.
Good job.
Because of you. I credit all of this to you, I can tell you. But I did buy cod liver oil in a pill the other day. I was drinking it, and I'm looking at sauerkraut right now. I'm in the refrigerator, so you know. And I got that from you. No, I got that from a neighbor in Arkansas.
Well, good job, buddy.
She's 97 years old right now. And,
she must be doing something right.
Yeah, and she came from Chicago and eats sauerkraut all the time. So I got that, and you also, I know, like that.
You know what I read this week? I read that about 30% of all the food that you take in your body is really not for you. So every time you eat, you're eating for two. Did you know that? For you? And then your microbiome, all the beneficial bacteria. So when you eat sauerkraut, you're trying to give a delicious buffet meal to your microbiome. And they, in turn, they help keep your body in good repair. So that's smart.
One last question that I do take rovastatin. And I don't like taking it. I don't like to take drugs, to tell you the truth. I've been taking this for 25, 30 years, and I would really like to get off of that.
Do you mind if I ask your age without being, I don't mean to be rude.
85. Well, no, 84. I'll be 85 in May.
Do you realize that you've already lived past all the average lifespan of all the men in America?
Well, yeah, but I want to continue to live, and if I do, I want to feel good.
Well, have you ever tried, has your doctor ever taken you off of it just to see what happens to your cholesterol numbers?
I've asked him to.
What does he say?
I've gone to him for 20 years or 25 years, and he thinks I should take it.
Okay.
I don't want to take it.
Well, I don't know exactly how I can respond to that over the air, but
okay.
I think that you have a reasonable concern. You don't have a diagnosis of diabetes, do you?
I've always been a type 1.
Oh, a type 1?
I'm not diabetic, but I'm on the verge of being diabetic.
I think that would be called probably a type 2 or maybe...
Oh, is that...
Yes, sir. A type 1 is where you have to take insulin.
No. I've never that. Never. But I've taken this... I've gone to this doctor for 20, 25 years, and I've always asked him and told him I'd like to get off of it, but, you know, he just won't do it.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's a lot of information on your labs that kind of tell us maybe what's going on, but at least you could try these things right here.
Okay.
Do you eat berries at all? You know, things like blueberries, strawberries?
Oh, I drink smoothies every night.
Okay. Is that your normal evening meal?
Well, no, not that's supplementary type of thing.
Okay, let me get this straight. You have a chicken fried steak with mashed potatoes for supper, and you make yourself a milkshake out of berries after that.
I try not to eat potatoes or fried steak. I'd rather eat hamburger meat that's cooked in oil.
So where you like to have a hamburger patty or a hamburger steak?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I use, to cook it in, I use extra virgin oil.
Well, remember one point. The people that consume the most onion content and garlic, they absolutely have the best cholesterol readings of any people on the planet.
Well, I put onion, I cook onions with this, and this is... olive oil that I use to cook.
Well, excellent. Okay. Well, I appreciate your phone call, buddy.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great Saturday. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right. There's a phone line open at 903-589-8507. I think somebody's trying to call the old phone line. So 903-589-8507. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Oops, sorry.
If you'll turn the... there you go. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I just have a quick question. I work at a minor emergency clinic here in town, and one day I was just run down, and they gave me a banana bag. And yeah. I felt so good afterwards, and I still kind of feel like I need another one again. It's like an addictive.
Well, do you think there's one element of that banana bag that really hit the mark for you? What do you think? What was you think the component was that helped you the most?
More or less, maybe the magnesium that's in it. Or zinc.
Can I tell you one thing that you could try is just the most simple experiment to see if it helps you, like, today or tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
How about if you took a cup of herbal tea? I'm just going to say hibiscus tea because that's one of my favorites. I have it every day. What if you put 2 teaspoons of Bragg's apple cider vinegar in the cup of tea,
uh-huh,
and then maybe add 1 teaspoon of raw honey and a pinch of Celtic or Celtic salt to it? Stir it up and drink it and tell me if it doesn't give you a significant boost in how you feel.
Okay. What is in the hibiscus tea?
Well, I'm just using the hibiscus tea because I think it tastes so good, but I think where the real magic is in the apple cider vinegar.
Okay.
And the Celtic or the Celtic salt, you can get that at any health food store. It looks like gray, wet, dirty sand, but that's a rich source of magnesium, kind of just playing on what you said.
Yeah, absolutely.
But even in the apple cider vinegar, it is a very interesting dose of electrolytes in there, and there's nothing that you can do to harm yourself by doing it. But if you say, oh my word, I drank a cup when I woke up this morning, and I drank a cup when I got home from work, and this is the best that I felt in 2 days.
Absolutely.
And I'm not making it a panacea, but the other thing that I would look at It may be that your adrenal glands are just a little bit worn down.
Yes.
I know that if I mention the word stress, you don't have the foggiest idea of what I'm talking about, because your life is perfect,
right,
like mine and everybody. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. No, I see a herbalist in town as well, and mm-hmm. she says some of my symptoms are due to my adrenals just being out of whack.
Well, that's usually what the banana bag goes for. It helps to feed the adrenals where they can kind of do their job better. But that's what you want.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be hibiscus tea. You could say, well, I have a bag of green tea. Well, that would work. Be just fine.
Okay.
You actually have nothing to lose. This is a very cheap, well, I say it's cheap. Raw honey is actually kind of expensive these days, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Would you consider like Manuka honey being a good alternative?
I'll take, yeah, that's fine. I'll take anything that, so if you already have a jar, a bottle of Manuka honey, just go with that.
Okay.
But I am telling you the truth. Just an average bottle of raw honey or jar will work perfectly fine.
Okay. Absolutely.
I like Manuka honey because it's so dark and dirty looking. That means it has all those different ingredients and components that are good
absolutely.
For the human body.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes good too.
Can I tell can I tell you just one more thing while I'm thinking of it?
Absolutely.
Please forgive me for talking over you. Sometimes the delay between the radio waves, I can't pick up on them real well, so that's all my fault. There's an herb that's called Ramania. Have you ever heard of Ramania?
No.
I'm going to kind of spell it phonically. I think it's spelled R-E-H-M-A-N-I-A, Ramania.
Mm-hmm.
If I get that wrong, I mean, you can type it in the computer. That's absolutely one of the greatest restoratives of the adrenal glands that I'm aware of.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, Ramania can be a home run. So if a person is in a place where they're going, you know what, I'm just a little bit run down. I feel like I'm kind of overwhelmed and I can't get my bearing again. I want to feel calm again. But Ramania is usually one of the greatest herbs. It is known as a tropho-restorative of the adrenal glands, and I think that's really worthy of consideration, because what would happen if you could actually target the feeding and the nourishing of the adrenal glands, and they could actually start to bounce back and they could start to do their job better? Then you'd have a better functioning immune system, and you would tell me, hey, I worked at the ER all day long, and I'm not worse for wear for it.
Exactly.
Now, you do know, everybody has those days that it's just like too much for anybody. So even if you're in the best condition, you're going to walk away from it going, I'm glad today's over. Yeah. Doesn't that happen occasionally?
Yeah, so absolutely.
So those are a few ideas.
Okay, and unfortunately, I'm wondering if this is one of the reasons why my adrenals are shot. You know, I was diagnosed ADD whenever I was a kid, and so I've been taking, you know, Adderall for many years, and I hate it. I hate being addicted to that. What would you suggest to wean off of? How to wean off of it?
Does that mean you're currently taking Adderall every day?
Yes.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some ideas. There's going to be one thing that I don't think I'm going to be able to tell you on the air because of my own personal reasons of not wanting to say that. But let me say this right here. There is an amino acid that's called taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. I'm going to suggest that there's probably a Goldilocks just right dose of taurine for you, and it may be right at 3,000 milligrams a day, or if you want to say 3 grams, that if you do that, it may be that all of a sudden a lot of your symptoms begin to work, they start to go away, and you start to resolve that. Now,
okay.
I'm going to lump that together with magnesium and cod liver oil. Okay. Not trying to make it a panacea, but at least the cod liver oil, to me, I don't know if I said this last week or not, but I think it was the Friday before. I'm thinking, yeah, I think that's right. Anyway, my point is this. I had never read this before, but I read that the human body is so jealous for the omega-3 fatty acids in cod liver oil that it refuses to ever burn those for fuel, meaning they're not converting in, they don't convert omega-3s into energy. I did not know that, because your body is so desperate to get that into the heart and the brain and maybe the adrenal glands. I mean, you need it for making hormones. You may not know this, but hormones are a little bit different in a woman than a man. Did you know that hormones... I'm just trying to be funny. I'm sorry. It's a bad joke. The other thing that I want you to consider... I read an article recently where they compared Adderall to what's called vitamin D3. Sometimes it's known as cholecalciferol. And so yesterday a woman was telling me a story. This is not totally related, but she said her daughter had a bad concussion. She got hit. A basketball player's shoulder just magically hit her temple really, really hard as the person ran over her probably during a basketball game. So she had a concussion. Yeah. But I said, do you know what's been shown to be very beneficial? And I looked up an article, and it was the use of vitamin D3 helping people recover more rapidly from a concussion. But, I mean, what's maybe your takeaway? Maybe there's something about vitamin D3 that actually helps optimize and feed and nourish the brain. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
But the article that I'm thinking of, you know what? I wonder, where is that? I'm going to see if I can find it right here. Okay. Ha, ha, ha. I found it. It shows that, here's one right here, vitamin D supplementation reduces the risk of a suicide. That has nothing to do with you.
Right.
Okay. There's one in here, though, that I came across that said when you take vitamin D3, that might actually end up working better than Adderall. But what you have to do is you have to find out, what is my Goldilocks just right dose of Adderall? I mean, of vitamin D3, so it can take the place of Adderall. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, perfect
so
sense.
So every human being is unique, and so you might have to experiment just a little bit. Now, can I take advantage of you for one moment? Because this is just so disturbing to me. I try hard not to get upset, but I got a call from a woman last Sunday, so this would have been 6 days ago. I literally came to the point where I felt weak, like I was fixing to start crying as she told me the story. But it's just one of those where there's just such an injustice. But anyway, a young man goes to the ER complaining of nausea, stomach pain. It's too much. What's the deal? Wants to throw up. Lots of discomfort. And they just kind of blow him off at the ER. They don't do any studies. Not your ER. Not yours. A different one. Different town.
Yeah.
And so he goes back August, September, twice in October, twice in November, twice in December. They finally do an imaging study. And in mid-December, they discover that he's got pancreatic cancer.
Oh, no.
Okay, so you realize what the point that I'm getting to. From June to December, that's half a year, that maybe he didn't have the right information where he could have maybe taken a different tact with his diet and lifestyle and everything else. Anyway, so she's calling me on the phone, and she's telling me that he's in hospice now. He's got a couple of days to live, and I just love the guy, and I hate it. It just made me sick. And I know I'm not trying to blame anybody. So what I did was I went to my computer, because I remember reading something a long time ago, and I typed in, is there any correlation between pancreatic cancer and vitamin D3 levels? And you're not going to believe it. The very first article that came up was a medical study where they had a woman that had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And this is the deal. Listen to this. The doctor wrote her a prescription for vitamin D2. That is a form of vitamin D, 50,000 units. But he made a huge mistake. He said, I want you to take this every single day. But it was an error on the prescription. But what she did was she followed the prescription, and that's all she did. She completely went into remission of the pancreatic cancer. That's unheard of. For 8 months. And as soon as the physician figured out he had made a mistake erringly by giving her too much vitamin D, he said, we're going to examine you. There were no signs of toxicity, no problems. She's in full remission. And they insist that they take her off of it because it's a big, huge medical mistake. And guess what happens next? The cancer comes back and she dies.
Oh, wow.
But my takeaway from that is, what if vitamin D has some unique effect on the body that the immune system works better? But that's all I was telling you about ADD and vitamin D.
Absolutely.
So, and the other one, the article that I read led with this morning talked about passion flower. No side effects. Uh-huh. So you've got plenty of things to start off and to work with, but I'm going to tell you this. With ADD, you want to make sure you err on the side of getting adequate protein. So if you tell me you love eggs, then there's your protein right there. Or chicken mm-hmm. or fish. What's your favorite form of protein?
Well, I love salmon. Absolutely love salmon.
Oh, my goodness. And you're following right into my plot to get you well. This is working out good. I can't believe yes. I'm tricking you so far. That's good. But what you're doing is you're feeding yeah. your body the very thing it needs, and that's like an optimal prime protein.
Absolutely.
It really is. So good choice. But sugar and junk food, that's really the enemy right here. It is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I listened to a lady tell me a story yesterday about how she's in charge of Head Start. I'm not going to tell you which school district, but I'm just listening. I'm in shock. Every day mm-hmm. she walks the kids out to the car. She opens the back door. A fog embankment of marijuana smoke comes out of every car that pulls up. The kids mm-hmm. don't have parents anymore. It's the iPad. They call them iPad babies now. You ever heard that term?
Yeah.
So the parents don't even attempt to be parents. They just use the iPad to raise the kids. And she so says bad. Kids bite her. They throw chairs at her. And I'm going, we're talking about three-year-olds here. Anyway, it's just a shocker. And probably all of them are on medication of some kind to control behavior. But none of them are eating salmon, I would guess.
Right. Yeah, no, that's super sad. So an entire generation growing up like that.
One thing that you may notice is as the adrenal glands start to come back online, you're going to start telling me I feel so much better mentally, physically, emotionally. It's like my body's in the best working order it's been in a long time, so this is good.
Yeah, absolutely. What was that herb that you were struggling to spell?
Ramona.
Ramona, okay.
It's almost like okay. I'm asking you to remind me, but it's called Ramona. Can you Ramona? Yeah, but that's the one that's probably, it's very famous for being very restorative. And so this doesn't have to be a deep conversation. If the adrenals are shot, why don't we take a strategy, which means why don't we target the feeding and the healing of them by using Ramona?
Okay.
And if there's a company called MediHerb.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost always, it's their Ramona that all the laboratories and all the universities are using to test Ramona. It's called MediHerb. I know because I've watched the videos from these universities who are doing studies on anxiety. And I look on the shelf and I'm going, there's a bottle of MediHerb Ramona right there. That's what they're testing. So they're very, very good at producing the highest absolute quality. So it's like anything else. You get what you pay for. So if you want the maximum potential therapeutic value, MediHerb is really hard to beat.
Okay, MediHerb?
Yep, that's it.
Got it. I'm on it right now.
You know what I've learned about you?
What?
You spell better than I do.
You're funny.
All right. Okay, I hope that helps you a whole lot.
Yes, sir. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, there's a phone line once again open. We have about 5 minutes left. 903-589-8507. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hello, this is Joe Parsons.
Yeah, Mr. Parsons, good to have you, sir.
How are you?
I'm very, very good. And you, sir?
And you, sir? Doing well. Been taking those Zepic.
You were the last time. The last time you called in, you were telling me you were taking it.
Well, I had a bad reaction the first shot, but since then it's been great. The first time I took it, it made me very, I had to go to the bathroom a lot and, made me nauseous, but the doctor said push through it. I'm already on the third shot and I'm losing 3 pounds a week so far.
Okay.
I haven't done anything different.
Well, how can I help you today?
Well, just wondering, there's so many different things out there. They want you to lose weight. I mean, I just keep doing what you're saying. I'm taking omega 3 and.
Well, how much weight do you need to lose?
Well, I started off at 392. I'm down to 313. I need to get down to 250. So I got 63 more pounds.
I promise you, this is not me trying to be critical at all, but how do you think you got in this shape?
Well, by working at pizza for 12 years and eating a large pizza every day for about 12 years.
Do you still work there?
No, sir. I've been gone for about 5 years, and my mom always said that I would never lose weight as long as I worked there. She was right.
Your mother sounds like a very smart woman.
Right.
Is she smarter than your father?
No, they're about the same.
That's really just me joking. Okay, well, how do you want me to help you?
Well, I want to come see you. You still have office hours Monday through Friday? Or?
Yes, sir. That's right.
I want to come down, and the last time you saw me, you said I was allergic to MSG, and I think that you're right.
Well, and you know what that covers? That covers just about all fast food. So you kind of know what you're getting into. If you eat fast food, you have a reaction to MSG. It's just going to cause you to eat more and more. Your appetite, it'll never stop. So that's one of the reasons why I just want you to eat real food. Kind of like the lady that was just on the phone. Maybe she was a nurse. What you want is you want to eat stuff like salmon and vegetables. If you're going to eat fruit, usually the berries are the ones that work the very, very best. What would happen if you could actually convince yourself that I'm not going to eat any junk food, only real food that God Himself has made for me?
Well, the problem was is when I was married for 15 years, I didn't do any cooking, and I don't cook. So I'm just now learning to cook for the first time. I have a cookbook.
Start with something very easy. For your first meal, why don't you make 4 eggs cooked in butter?
I do that.
Okay, so you can cook. Eggs. That's good.
I can cook a little bit.
You could take some tuna fish, and you could turn it into, you could drain the water off of it and put it in a bowl, and you could cut up celery and pickles and pecans and apples and stuff into it, couldn't you?
Well, what my mom wants me to do is start one day a week, just make like a big pot of beans and rice, whole grain rice or pasta. And, you know, I know you said stay away from pasta, but I think a whole grain is okay, right?
Well, here's the number one deal. There is a hormone that's called insulin. As long as your insulin stays high, you're not going to have the results you want. What Ozempic's going to do, it's going to cause your muscles to waste away, and you're going to atrophy, and you're going to become weaker and weaker physically. I don't think there's any way around that as long as you're taking it.
Well, if you say that, sir, I'm going to stop taking it.
Well, I can't legally tell you to stop taking the Ozempic, but I'm telling you what you're headed for. So that's one of the reasons why. I mean, it just depends on how desperately do you want your health restored. And if you want to be at 250, I think you're being completely reasonable. I'm all for that. I'd like you to tell me that you feel amazing, that you feel physically good, your mind is clear, you have plenty of energy, you're motivated, you're out of pain, you can work all day long, and you love it.
Well, I'm at that point right now.
Well,
I'll tell you in a private conversation, that was mainly a spiritual breakthrough. But
well, sure.
Basically, I felt better than I've ever felt since my wife and I split up 8 years ago, but...
Well, I sure am sorry for your loss. Well, I think if you started coming up with your own strategy and writing down exactly what you're going to do every day, so just take out a sheet of paper and just plan out strategically your breakfast, lunch, and supper. Do that right now, and then plan out your exercise. If you do that, it will happen. But if you don't write it down and just try to wing it and fly by the seat of your pants, it's probably never going to happen. So just start writing everything down.
I'm a person to write it down. I have a journal, and I also have a thing to do list that grows every day, but it seems like I get like 80% of it done every day.
Well, good. Well, have you ever written down what you're going to eat for breakfast, lunch, and supper?
I've tried all kinds of apps. I've tried.
I'm asking you if you've written down that, though. That's what I'm asking. I'm not. No, and that's all I'm getting at. I'm not trying to be argumentative, but you've got to be able to do the simplest thing. Take a pen and a sheet of paper and strategize what you're going to do, and it'll get done. Unfortunately, we are all out of time, but thanks for calling, Mr. Parsons.
All right. God bless you.
God bless you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.